Welcome, everyone. Okay. Welcome to today's meeting. And is someone going to put the screen up for me, the agenda, today's draft agenda? We can look over and approve.
Can you do introductions first?
Yeah, introductions and welcome. I thought my welcome was enough. Okay. Feel free to go ahead. Melina.
Thanks, Richard. Melina Clark, Council Staff. And I'll pass it to Kira.
Hi, everyone. Kira, Council Staff. And I will pass it to Ben.
Hi there, Ben, Council Member. Happy to be here today. I'm sorry I have to leave early today. Pass it to Stephen.
Hey, folks. Stephen Spano, the HCAP Staff Attorney at AORP. I'll pass it over to Derek.
Everyone, Derek, co-chair and council member, and I'll pass it over to Beth.
Hi, Beth Neary, HIV Health Services, and I'll pass it over to Mark.
Mark Millar, council staff. Lee.
Hi, Lee Jewell here, council member, and I also need to leave at 3:55. And I think that's everybody, right?
Yes. And once again, I'm Richard Sullivan. Welcome, everyone. I'm co-chair and full council member. I'll get a little more professional here. I just rolled in from the beach. Sorry. So let me
get my... Mark's reaction says it all.
I did. I've been there since 8 o'clock. So let me get my bearings straight. So if we could look over today's draft agenda and review and approve. Take a look at this.
I'd like to add an agenda item, if I may. Which is, maybe we can do it, actually Stephen can be a part of the conversation too. Let's do it before HCAT so we can have everyone here for it, about feelings about in-person meetings versus not in-person. And let's maybe do that after public comment, if that's okay with you, Richard and Derek?
Absolutely. Okay. So is everyone okay with adding that? How's the agenda look otherwise? Anyone need any changes? See anything they'd like to change? Okay, so we can approve that. And how about we review and look over March 2nd draft minutes? Mm-hmm. Anyone like to add anything or talk about this at all? Okay, that's approved. Thank you, everyone. Do we have any announcements today?
Just a reminder that this month's full council meeting is in person.
Thank you, Mark. Uh-huh. Any other announcement? That's big. Okay, do we have any public comment? No. Okay, so we'll move to Mark. You wanted to talk about this now, the in-person meetings, please.
Okay, so you have a decision before you. Let's do a straw poll because this has not been noted for a vote on whether or not you would like this group, I guess beginning in May, or it could really begin at any time if you want it to be later than May, is to return to in-person or is to stay virtual. Now, at different jurisdictions across the country, different places are doing different things. So you really have the potential to do whatever you want. The only thing that I would actually recommend against would be concretizing. How did that just come to me? Concretizing hybrid meetings. Those are really a problem. They mess with our ability to even engage with each other, let alone run foul of local and state ordinances when it comes to open meetings. So I would hesitate to put that in stone. I also have a dream that one of the committees will choose to remain virtual. I'm thinking Council Affairs might want to do that, just because I like the idea of having possibilities, different kinds of possibilities of engagement for council members. And so, you know, some folks might just have different needs when it comes to being in person or not being in person. So I'm certainly not saying or even suggesting that this should be that committee. Like I said, I think Council Affairs might choose to do that. That said, membership did decide to meet in person starting in May. So they are the first committee to subcommittee to do so. Of course, we will all be meeting in person for steering starting this month as well. So with that said, I guess before I just do a basic straw poll of would you prefer to be in person or to stay virtual, any thoughts, any opinions or feelings that anyone wants to share?
Personally, for me, for my schedule, I'm seeing clients right after this. I would love to stay virtual for a couple of months at least. So yeah, it's my vote.
Okay. Richard?
Yeah, I'd be open to in-person, but I'm looking at everyone on the screen and it's kind of a small group. Everyone's kind of comfortable. I mean, it would, you know, people have to travel. I would vote for other people's convenience to keep this virtual for at least the foreseeable future. At least this one. We got the full council coming up. I'm looking forward to seeing all the council, but for this one, I'd say maybe virtual.
All right. I'd love to hear from everyone. Ben?
Yeah, I'm open to either. I think unfortunately, I'm living a hybrid schedule and it makes my schedule complicated because people like to book meetings with me back to back, but they forget to factor my travel time. So I think that I'm down with either. And I am down with either.
Okay. Well, I think I can see where the ship is headed. Derek?
I'm flexible in this area. I'm also working a sort of hybrid life as well. So,
all right, let's hear from our government rep, Beth. What do you think?
I also am living a hybrid schedule and don't have strong feelings.
Okay, Stephen, last but never least.
I defer. I don't have any strong feelings. I just love seeing everyone and giving high fives. That's really the only benefit, but it's certainly not the most convenient. So I have no preference.
Okay. Well, first of all, Stephen, you do have power. We all have power. We're empowerment centered community body. Okay, so then what I propose that we just keep it virtual just based on hearing what people are saying and then just check in. You know, you all can change your mind like whenever. It does sound like it'd be more convenient for at least a couple people. And at any point, you could just revisit and turn it back to in person. So, all right, then let's just keep it as is. I don't think we even really need a vote for that. Based on what you all are saying, I would have wanted to vote. I think if you're going to determine to go right back to in person, because that's a step. All right, thanks. That was easy. And also for those in person junkies like myself, I am addicted to being absolutely in person. We still have two potential steering and full council where we'll get to high five each other, and I guess elbow touch. Is that what people do? Yeah.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Thanks, Mark. So we've decided to stay virtual with check-ins here and there to see what the temperature is. Good deal. Thanks, everyone. Okay, so now the man with power, Stephen, HCAP.
Thank you, everybody. So first, also congratulations, Richard. I know you're going to be chair of the council now. I love seeing that in the last meeting. I'll highlight just a few, you know, per the usual, rather than go through the entire report, I'll highlight a few cases that I think are, important to notate or to important to note from this last month. I think everybody, I don't know if everybody saw the note that I sent out, but I've kind of changed, in addition to thinking that this is easier to read, having the numbers starting at 2022 for the contract cycle. I think it's a whole lot easier for me to organize. So you'll see that normally when I have cases that are dragged over from the previous year, they retain the number from the previous year. I closed all of those cases as of the 28th of February and reopened them as new cases for this year. That's why you're seeing that cases that were actually pending are listed under the new cases right now, but they are cases that we've been discussing. Some of them are cases that we've been discussing. In addition, closed cases, if they are opened in the same month and closed in the same month, they appear under new cases. So there's a significant number of cases listed as new cases here that are both closed and pending. It'll be further clarified on the next report. But if anybody has any concerns about tracing back the history of a particular case, I'm happy to answer those questions on an individual basis. It's just easier for me to do that rather than deal with the tracking of the numbers over the course of the entire year. So I'm hoping that this eases the process and also eases the reading of the report. So the first thing that I wanted to kind of point out, because I thought it was, it's actually a little bit disconcerting. I have a client, if you'll look at 2210 on page 3 of the report, this is a case where the client was, this is an issue. So it came through as a dental issue. And if you were at the planning council and you saw my annual report, you'll note there were a number of dental cases. I also talked about it at the last community engagement meeting, that there were a lot of dental cases this last year. This was one that doesn't appear to be an issue with the service provider, nor does it appear to be an issue with the client, like a behavioral issue or anything. What it is it seems like, and this is kind of uncovered in, has been uncovered in like the initial stages of my investigation of the issue. What it appears is that, by way of background, basically the client was trying to receive dental services. They were saying that they could not charge his care account because the client had private insurance. Client said, "I don't have private insurance." They showed him on the screen where it said that he had private insurance. They said, "You just need to call this company and figure out what's going on." They called, that company has no record of him. So he said, "Can I have a letter to that effect?" They said, "No." And there was some back and forth. And then basically the client is left in this position where he can neither access his care account, nor can he access private insurance to get dental insurance. When I spoke with the service provider said that this is an issue that's been coming up recently as a result of recent legislation, which required that healthcare insurers provide both dental and vision care. As a result of that legislation, it became kind of an automatic addition when people purchased what it seems like Medicare Advantage plans. And the unfortunate thing is, at least from what I'm hearing, is folks are kind of being targeted for the sale of these Medicare Advantage plans. And they're not, the people that are selling those plans are not investigating exactly what the full scope of these clients' healthcare needs are, and or investigating exactly what their insurance situation is. And so people are purchasing these plans and it's affecting their overall care in kind of unexpected ways with unintended consequences. So I don't actually have an answer for this, but it is something to be cognizant of. I think particularly folks that are aging need to be cautious about people selling them medical coverage or even supplemental medical coverage, because it could have a deleterious effect on their overall like panel of insurance, it seems. And I'm not the expert on insurance, but I am diving into this. I have a law clerk supporting the client on phone calls, and I'll actually, because the client, the law clerk hasn't really been able to make any headway, I have a call scheduled tomorrow in order to, I have a call scheduled tomorrow to hop on the phone with Medicare to find out exactly what's going on and how we can resolve this. So I wanted to raise this just because I think it is important for the community to know and be cautious about people selling them supplemental insurance without investigating exactly how it's going to affect their overall care. The next issue I will check in about is on the next page 4, client number 2022-12. This is an issue where I really just wanted to highlight it because I think it highlights the success of the program and also the strength of the service providers that we have. This is an issue where the client was being supported by the service provider, but the service provider didn't really have quite all of the information in order to be able to get the reasonable accommodation for the client. So with the support of both primary care and legal services together, we were able to secure a reasonable accommodation for this client who has a very high level of need, and she's now supported. So I think, you know, that's an instance where coordination of care efforts between HCAP and other service providers can really make a difference. A final one that I wanted to raise, and this is obviously going to be an ongoing thing that I think we talk a lot about this year, but on page 6, client number 2022-25, this is a housing issue involving the RCFCI transition. I do want to report that there have been some significant improvements to the, you know, how service providers are working through this transition. That being said, there are some gaps that I've been able to identify with regard to the process. The plan set out, at least in my recollection, the plan that was set out by the consultant for the mayor's office, you know, didn't dig into the nitty-gritty of how, step-by-step, how this was going to happen. And if you'll recall, one of the ways that we were able to get client support in moving independently from an RCFCI to a private residence was by attaining three things: some level of support for the clients, a deep long-term subsidy, and help in identifying the housing and moving costs. That housing navigation was a critical part of the puzzle. What I'm finding with the folks that are moving from RCFCI to a similar level of care is very different. There are fewer resources available for these people to be able to access, for example, an RCFE, which is a residential care facility for the elderly. A lot of these clients who require an RCFCI level of care, if they're not going to be allowed to stay in those facilities, they need to be able to move somewhere. But moving to a long-term care facility is a challenge. One, because my understanding, at least so far, again, I'm not an expert in the insurance field, but my understanding is that Medicare does not cover housing. So moving them to an assisted living facility, things like that, cost a lot of money. And you're talking about folks who are mainly supported by public assistance. Social Security is I think $1,060 a month or something like that. That simply won't cover the cost of some of these expensive communities that are built for seniors. That doesn't even touch on the topic about those people who are not eligible for senior housing. So what I'm finding is there's a real gap and a need for qualified housing navigators who can help navigate the insurance issues, identify the communities that are appropriate for that, can provide the level of care that these folks need, and then of course figuring out the logistics of actually moving somebody who has multiple disabilities to a permanent facility and reorganizing their system of care to the extent that it's necessary. So, I have not yet advocated to our government partners here, but, you know, the DPH, I have spoken with the mayor's office. I have an email out to them now. I'm waiting on a response. They previously were able to find contractors to help with that housing navigation in the independent, moving folks toward independent housing. But this is a more specialized kind of area that I'm trying to keep my eye on, and I'm trying to fill that gap to the best of my ability. I obviously can't, pay anybody's salary, but somebody can and somebody should. So I think those are the three cases that I wanted to highlight. If anybody has other questions about those or other cases, I'm happy to answer them.
Hey, Beth, I have a question for you. What do you think about this in terms of what Stephen said about finding navigators that would be able to kind of navigate this kind of complicated terrain?
Well, I think that there are different types of navigators and different types of case managers who have quite different capabilities and access to housing resources. So I think it would, and you know, I often think of the case managers in terms of how responsive they can be to clients' different levels of needs or different levels of challenges. So I don't know which set are the best at housing off the top of my head, but I think that that's pretty easy to find out. So I think we might be able to help with that.
Yeah, Stephen, I would also, I don't know, you're familiar with the FOG group. There may be someone connected in FOG who might be able to help you if you throw open a question there.
Yes, I will tap into the FOG group. I think that's a great resource. I foresee this being an ongoing need for folks. And I feel like, you know, the existing service provider, who are charged with kind of turning over the tenancies in these facilities simply don't have the capability to provide that service, but they need it. I took one meeting yesterday that wound up being 2 hours, and we could barely scratch the surface of the facilities that, you know, we have a list of facilities here that, you know, that's 3 pages long. We have to talk about what's their location, or do they have availability? How much do they cost? The clients have to be taken there to see if they're eligible for the community, and also if it's a good fit for them. It has to be close to their other service providers. And this particular client doesn't have to go to, you know, for example, their money manager on a regular basis to give their card. But some clients do have to go to swipe their card with the money manager. And the only reason they can do that is because it's close by, right? Traveling across town to run and swipe your Social Security card on the third of the month every month might be a barrier to a lot of other services, if you're not nearby. There's a significant number of factors that have to be explored for each and every resident, and the plan as written requires that to happen on an annual basis for every client. So the transition plan starts at the point of admittance into the facility, and they have to begin planning for their discharge in a year. And all of these factors have to be discussed at the admission stage. So, and then continued throughout that, you know, annual, you know, throughout the year while they're stabilized. So it's a very involved thing. It's one thing to reach out. I'm definitely going to reach out to the FOG group because I think we have an acute need right now, but I foresee it being an ongoing need. There should be a staffer to do this, somebody that knows these facilities, that can pick up the phone, that it's not just me cold calling or a case manager cold calling and saying, hey, I'm so-and-so from here and I'm working with, you know, and then have to relearn how the insurance works with that facility. What insurance do they take? How much does it cost? What's their turnaround? You know, like learning that every single time for a single case manager seems like a waste of resources to me.
So a couple of things. One, it'd be good to know at some point if this is something that's happening with just a few people or if it's happening with a whole lot of people, right? Secondly, if we can identify what those problems are, and you're going through them now, so I encourage you to document them. FOG was set up to address these problems, you know, to do trainings actually. HHS is involved with training people. So, you know, if we can identify what that problem is, get an idea of just how pervasive it is, then we can figure out how we might want to tackle this.
That's great. I can answer at least one question, well, to the best of my ability. I couldn't give you an exact number, but when you talk about some of the facilities, the number of beds that they have, that is what we're talking about on an annual basis. The client, under the current stated plan by the mayor's office, the residential care facilities for the chronically ill, the RCFCIs, are transitional in that they are not permanent housing. They have a guideline. The guideline is a one-year residency, within which time the client is supposed to stabilize and then move to either independent housing or to another care facility of a similar nature, or move up if they realize that they're not going to stabilize or health deteriorates while they're there, move to something else with a higher level of care, like a skilled nursing facility, or other. So the plan as written, it would indicate that it is a significant number of people on a regular rolling basis.
Right. And so what we can do about that might be limited. We could recommend a training, to kind of deal with this. But it's good to know that if this is a trend, we need to figure out what that trend is and how bad it is.
I also have a question on another topic. For the very first one you raised about dental and insurance, the private insurance getting in the way of use of the Ryan White funds. Would it be possible for you to meet with Dean and me at some point this month to figure that out? Because it should be, I think it's likely that the provider may need technical assistance on eligibility for Ryan White, because if people are underinsured, they're also eligible. And it sounds like their insurer is not even recognizing them. So that seems, maybe that's an administrative burden, and they'll soon have their private insurance that covers their dental services. I have a feeling that's not going to be the end of that story, and that there's not going to be a practicable amount of money available to do dental work. Maybe I'm wrong and they've got $2,000 in their private insurance bucket, but if not, there should be a way to make them eligible.
Yes. Yeah, I can absolutely. I'll shoot you an email and I'll CC Dean on it for us to schedule a discussion on that. My understanding was that the Ryan White Care Fund was the kind of insurer of last resort, and so they're required to tick through all of the other possible insurers before they can tap into the care funding. Now, why they can't bypass that when they have the knowledge that this is not a legitimate funding source is curious to me, but I'm trying to work through within their system. But I think you're right. I think some training and some clarification could help.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a newly occurring thing and they haven't realized yet, maybe, that this is going to have some. There are some, it's true, it's the insurer of last resort, and you have to bill to other funding sources first. There are some sort of flexibilities on the edges of if somebody has Medi-Cal with extremely high share of costs, so they wouldn't actually access care, they can be eligible for Ryan White.
Okay.
So I don't know if this would be similar. This is actually new for us too.
Okay.
But I'm optimistic.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, of course.
Anything else for Stephen? Thanks a lot, Stephen.
Thank you all.
And welcome to Thomas Noble. Thomas, do you have anything for the group before we move along?
Not at all. Did we thank Stephen for their presentation in the last full council meeting? And say
thank you.
Yeah, it was great. And I appreciated that. I kind of messaged you, but it's staying in front of everybody. It's just a combination of your personal experience along with your professional experience, I thought really brought a lot to it all. So thanks for sharing.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, everyone. So I see next is per last month's discussion, we're going to discuss the possibility of having DPH present on the use of added funds from last year. So Mark, do you want to?
Sure. But before I do that, so Stephen's here and not at steering, where we actually go through the evaluations, I wonder if I could just take a moment and let Stephen know what people thought about his presentation. It's a special treat, Stephen, that I don't think you normally get to have.
Hopefully, it doesn't look anything like the feedback I get when I was TAing. But
well, I guess we'll just have to see. So
sit back and take it, Stephen. Come on.
100% of respondents said that the presentation was well-prepared and relevant to the HCPC. Comment number one, these reports are always excellent and provide important insight into the circumstances and support for some of our consumers with the greatest needs. Appreciated the tie-in to ICM services too. Big thank you to Stephen for his compassionate quality work. Comment number two, very well done. Comment number three, excellent report with summaries and insights we can use to guide for us in future considerations. And comment number four, wonderful, excellent work, triple exclamation point. Kudos to Stephen, double exclamation point.
Aren't you glad you stayed around, Stephen?
You're making me blush, Mark. Thank you.
Oh my God, we got to stop this before he gets a big head.
New bandana. All right. So all right. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Stephen. Mark, do you want to pick up the baton here about this?
Sure. So as you all heard, I think it was last month, there's some advocacy happening from long-term survivors around what they portrayed as a loss of funding. I think specifically within ETE dollars. So Thomas is here, can certainly speak to anything that, any perspective that he might have, that they might have on the prevention and CHEP side. I have talked to Bill Bloom. I can certainly ask him if folks are interested to come to the next meeting, but I've talked to Bill and he's not aware of any funding decrease in either CARE funds or ETE CARE funds for the community, the population that the two gentlemen was talking about. He's actually rather perplexed at where that was coming from when the services are still fully funded. There's been no drop off, and they're certainly, comparatively speaking to many other EMAs and TGAs, really robust services. So that, I think, was Bill's perspective the last time I talked to him. If you all want to hear more on that, I can ask him to attend, although I'm not sure beyond what else he'd add beyond what I literally just said. But he, of course, did not opine on ETE or CDC or any other kind of prevention dollars. Thomas, do you have anything to add on that?
I do. So what's confusing me a little bit, and I'm not sure if this is the dialogue or not, is the long-term survivors doing the advocacy. So what happened with the roadmap is that we took, from a prevention side, we were doing so well with HIV, right? We went from a couple thousand to 150 cases per year. So we decided and went through the community process of the roadmap to include Hep C STIs. And we're also trying to work in overdose into the next funding round with the RFAs that CHEP is putting out. So we did that just prior to COVID. It got caught in COVID land. And we just are defrosting it and actually meeting with the awardees that won this week and last week. But what that meant was the fact that we had the same amount of money, but we were spending it to address disparities across those issues. So it's not a cut, might be the wrong way to, it's the same amount of money, it's just going to different spots. So that means some programming that was happening prior to that de-siloing process will have less, and some programming that didn't have anything will have something. Is that sound? Yeah. Okay. And I forgive my coyness. I'm never quite sure how much I can disclose, and especially when talking about funds and being transparent, and then also at the same time not being. I'll stop there.
I mean, I think you can have, except for funding that is going out to bid, in which certain council members may have conflicts of interest, I think you could be fully transparent about how funding, I mean, public dollars are being spent, right?
Except RFPs. Anything that's not yet released about RFPs negotiated in contracts.
Yeah, I thought I mentioned that.
Well, we're in that negotiation contract press.
So that's why you're referring.
I think I'm putting out a little more than I actually, I think I'm okay, but I want to be conservative with regards to not getting, not jeopardizing the process.
But okay, so Mark, this was a suggestion to maybe bring this up to the full council, but we don't need that now, right? After this explanation. Is that what this discussion?
That's not for me to judge. That's for you all.
And it's not for me to judge either, to tell you the truth, because this is where my lane is clear, that I'm government and I I can't participate in advocacy or talk or encourage it or anything along those lines.
So we're going to discuss if we want DPH to come up to the full council and explain the same things we just heard. Is that what we're voting on?
I don't know if this is a vote. Is this noted as a vote? I don't recall.
It says vote, discussion, vote.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's up to you all. I mean, if you feel this is a topic that is one that the council has shown interest in, not so much the community or the demographic, which of course the council has a lot of interest in, it's been a targeted population for many, many years now, but if this particular controversy is something that you feel the council has been talking about, then yeah, but if not, I'm not sure why you would, actually. It's up to you all.
Crickets. I'm not really see the need to talk about it at the full council meeting at this point. I don't know. It just seems like if we're not actually talk, I mean, it's just a discussion, right? It's not about we're taking action or anything.
Yeah. Well, we can update steering if you'd like on this topic, or Richard can himself during the steering committee meeting and. Maybe steering will feel strongly about adding it to the calendar or not. If you all don't want to set in stone or like a presentation request.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, in my notes, I was going to present this at steering, what happened here, and give them a recap and let it go from there.
Perfect.
Is that okay, acceptable to everyone? Any objections?
Sounds good, Richard. And just to acknowledge that once contracts are signed, we can show you what those shifts were and that landscape from our perspective. So, once I get the green light to that we're past that point, more than willing to be as transparent as possible. And it's an interesting, from my perspective, it's a very interesting time. Like we're sometimes addressing disparities. There's these pinch points, right? Because you're taking funds from someplace and putting them someplace else. And this is the result of that, so.
All right, thank you, Thomas. By the way, just before we move on, I'm taking an introduction to public health class at City College right now. It's thick. I didn't realize how much goes into the public health. Really, I just wanted to put that out there. It's a pretty thick class.
Beth will school you in that if you want.
A lot of good stuff. So to continue, I think this is Melina now. Needs assessment and COLA updates?
Sure. Thanks, Richard.
Okay.
So for today, my hope is to pick a COLA target. Last month, we picked our needs assessment target as the trans community in San Francisco. And so for today, I think it would be really great if we could pick at least one COLA target. And then I also would like to discuss recruitment for the needs assessment, getting connections and email introductions, stuff like that. But I think before that, why don't we try to pick a COLA target? And I have some notes from last time on what our ideas were. So last month, folks were discussing substance use as possible COLA target, although we haven't narrowed it down. And then there also was the suggestion, I think this came from Richard, on clients who are using the Linkage Center. I think either one could be a great COLA. I will say that for the substance use COLA, I think it could be good to have Laura here again for that discussion, and she was unfortunately unable to make it today. And especially since substance use is a very broad topic, I wonder if we could talk about that today, or we could save it for when Laura is here next month, hopefully. And I think that I would love to hear y'all's thoughts on the COLA around the Linkage Center. Just historically, when we do COLAs that are involving a specific place, it usually really helps with recruitment, which is something that's been really hard the last couple years. So I think anything that can help us with recruitment could be potentially good, but I would love to hear the committee's thoughts on these ideas.
I love the idea of the Linkage Center. It's been in the news and there's a lot of controversy around it. And it seems like this is a kind of a community test in terms of its effectiveness. And there seems to be in the press some question around that. So this is a very complex issue, as everyone knows. I would love to see us kind of dive into that one.
Thanks, Lee. Did I see someone else unmute or raise a hand? I see Richard.
Yes, Melina, what would, just briefly, what would this look like? Maybe there would be a couple of people there at the Linkage Center physically representing and asking what type of questions, what would we be mining?
Well, usually how we do this is we first connect with staff at the Linkage Center, figure out, do they have any groups that are meeting? That's been a way that we've connected to COLAs in the past, trying to kind of piggyback on an existing group that's happening. Does that kind of answer your question? A little bit? I lost my train of thought.
Go ahead, Mark. I can respond as well, Richard, to your question. Mm-hmm. I think this would mean that staff would connect directly with Paul Harkin, who's a council member, obviously, who is a big part of the Linkage Center, along with many, many other agency and government staff. Because you'd need that way in, right? You can't just swing by, really, and do a needs assessment. And so what I imagine would happen is that whoever they connect with, possibly Paul, would then do outreach himself, potentially, to people who are using the Linkage Center, and certainly include the, our incentives as well. And then the focus group itself would meet either there or maybe even more likely somewhere else. I'm not sure there's like a space there for an actual group discussion. And as far as the questions go, you know, that's something that there's already in some ways like a base template, and then this group can certainly add and, you know, discuss and add on questions. That will be important because this is in many ways a population that is both one that's been within the community for a very long time, but is using a fairly new service. I think it would be also great, just as I always like to remind folks, if staff have partners in council members with this. So what we've done in past COLAs is staff will do this, and then one council member will come along and be able to like maybe ask questions as well, just be a part of that process. So I always want to push that. It's one of the good things about our COLAs that we try to make them collaborative, with council members being a part of the process whenever possible.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay. I'd actually be up for that if you want to keep me in mind, if you needed a physical presence. Yeah. I know the logistics you were talking about. I was just wondering about, I'm confused. I was a little confused about the COLA process. When you do have the focus group, you said there's a template, but I was just wondering, are you going to talk about COVID, the Linkage Center and the services they're provided, substance use, being unhoused? What would there be a main topic, or I didn't understand that.
Usually we start out more broad and we try to base the conversation on responses we're hearing from clients. We try to keep it more open-ended so that we're not coloring people's responses at all, if that makes sense. We start out asking stuff about quality of life, which I think can include, for a lot of folks, include stuff about housing or substance use, harm reduction stuff. So usually a lot of the things you mentioned do get covered, but like I said, we try to have it be more coming straight from the clients.
I understand, thank you. Like I said, reach out if you want physical presence and assistance.
Thanks, Richard. I think Beth was next, or Thomas.
Go for it, Beth.
Oh, thanks.
One small thing is that Bill Bloom and Nina Davis are also from HIV Health Services are also working with the Lincoln Center right now, not full-time, but about 40% and 80% respectively. So if, I think Paul Harkin is the right place to start, but if you run into any trouble or need a DPH side, there, maybe start with Bill, I would say first, and then Nina second. And also just a thinking through the, often the COLAs have been very focused on the HIV care network and getting feedback about that. And I have a feeling that there aren't any specific groups or like, it's new enough that I don't know if there are any HIV specific services. I know they're linking people to services in that field. But I wonder if you might want to actually remove that focus to some degree other than the broad prevention sense, because I think a lot of people may not have disclosed their status to their peers. Just that.
Yeah. Usually for the COLAs, we don't ask people to disclose their status because we do want to include both people who are living with the HIV, but also people who are maybe not more involved in the prevention side. So the COLAs, while often we do have a lot of HIV positive folks in the COLAs, we definitely want them to be able to address prevention concerns as well. So appreciate you naming that.
Yeah, I had the same, yeah, it's not an agency that's providing services for people living with HIV per se, or even prevention, but it is the population's there. So especially for prevention and yeah, so it's different. I agree with Lee, it's timely. So I think we should definitely pursue it if we can pull it off. And I think at the same time, there might be almost too many people. Been there and there's just a lot of activity happening. So it's not a bad thing, I think. So just a heads up on that.
Thanks, Thomas. I think that's where we'll really, like Paul or maybe Bill could really help us out with targeted recruitment. And yeah, again, appreciate you naming the prevention concerns. I believe COLAs actually were first created so that we could address prevention within focus groups and needs assessment. So thank you for naming that. And it sounds like a lot of folks are into the idea of this COLA. And I think if we want to have more discussion, that's great. Or I would say the next step would be a motion is what we would need to proceed with this.
I'd be happy to put forward an motion to adopt the Linkage Center as their study. Can I have a second? Derek first, and then Richard was the third.
Okay, so Lee moved, Derek seconded. And with a third from Richard, love it.
Can I just ask a mechanics question before we let's vote or whatever? And then I wanna ask a logistics question.
Sure.
Anybody in opposition? Okay, so we're voted. What happens if we can't do it? Just because
Was that a vote though?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I wanted to.
Sorry, I was unsure if you were asking a question before the vote or after. I would say for the vote, we usually do these by consensus, I think. So I think with the first and second, if there are none opposed, motion passes.
Sounds good.
Now, Thomas, you're asking what happens if we can't do this COLA?
Yeah, just due to the fact that this is a very visible spot at the moment and there's a lot of traffic going through it. I can actually see a small chance somebody just saying, yeah, not a good idea to try to make that happen here. So do we have a backup plan or should we just not discuss that or just be prepared for, we might have to come back next month with knowing that that was we got shot down.
I think that we should give it a go and see what happens. And I think every year our goal is to do at least a couple COLAs or more. And we definitely do want to pick at least one more target. But I think if you all are okay pushing the substance use discussion to next month, I think it would help to have Laura here. So my perspective would be to start talking to Paul and Bill and asking them, hey, do you think we can do this? Is this possible? Can you support us in this? And I think it would be a really worthwhile COLA to do if we can pull it off. So I would want to, put in effort before we just take it off the table. I don't know if other folks have thoughts on that. Mark.
If I may be so bold to suggest another community as well, just like right now instead of the next one, based on the discussion we had earlier and sort of wanting to know where are long-term survivors at as far as their perception of the service continuum and their care, how about that be a COLA? I hear a motion?
Long-term survivors is what I heard you say, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, that was the group who came to us beforehand who expressed some concerns. And so why not do an actual focus group with folks from that community to get more in depth about it?
I always feel like when it totally sounds good to me. Defining long-term survivor always gets a little sticky.
It sure does.
I mean, I like the idea. I'd like to have more discussion about it. And I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to bounce. But yeah, I think it's definitely worth looking at.
I feel like also it could be whoever identifies as a long-term survivor. Right? Yeah.
So do I hear a motion to make that as another target for COLAs?
I'll make an emotion.
I'll second that.
To look at do a COLA for long-term survivors, looking with people self-identifying what long-term survivor means. Okay. Richard, now you can second it.
Yes, I second that. Absolutely.
All right.
Motion carries. Sounds like there's no opposition. Great, this is so exciting. We have two COLA targets. I'm really excited to get working on these. So thank you everyone. And why don't we jump right back into needs assessment, and then we could pick up on substance use COLA discussion next month. Does that sound okay to folks? Okay, great. So Dave's unable to join today, but we are really hoping today to get some good contacts in agencies that are serving trans populations. It really is helpful to have, you know, introductory emails, direct connections. That's what's going to really help us with recruitment for doing individual interviews as well as focus groups. And I think I would want to just make enough connections with different agencies that we are connecting with all of the different populations of trans people in San Francisco so that we're really painting as accurate picture as possible of the whole community and what they're going through right now and what their needs are. And I think once we get some connections and thinking about recruitment, then we can talk a little bit more about methodology. But I would love to hear just offhand if anybody works directly with trans communities, any like specific trans focus groups or support groups. Ben mentioned in the chat that he could help us out at the AIDS Foundation, which would be great. I know that they do a lot of groups over there. Anyone here have any suggestions?
I think we haven't seen her for a bit and I owe her a phone call, but Melina, if you want to reach out to Billy Cooper, I know that she's a member of I think several support groups, which would be ideal places for you to do groups.
Yes, that is a great idea. And I actually saw her a couple weeks ago. So
yeah?
For 700 form stuff. So I will reach right out to her.
As long as you're doing that, can you remind her that this month's meeting is in person?
Yeah. Okay.
Possibly a San Francisco Community Health Center, SFCHC, has quite a few drop-in groups, I don't know, or drop-in times. And the Women's COE through UCSF, I think they have some groups. They at least have some focus groups of their own.
And right, could you say that second one again at UCSF?
Oh,
what's
it called? The Women's Center of Excellence. Okay. And if you'd like to connect with that, it's a smaller population, but a distinct one. Just let me know if you'd like to be connected. Is this for HIV positive only, or is it broader than that?
This is for HIV positive only because it's the youth assistant.
Then I will leave there.
Okay.
You might want to connect with Juba Kalanka on the council. I know that St. James does work with a trans community.
Okay.
You have to be clear, of course, around it being HIV positive, folks. So since
Stephen mentioned Lyric in the comments. That's one I was thinking of. I don't think they have any HIV specific groups, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, it doesn't always have to be groups as well. Certainly. There's a lot of the means assessment is based around individual interviews. So
Ella
also has Transgender Tuesdays. It's not HIV focused, but some overlap.
Could you say that one more time?
Oh, Tom Waddell, Tom Waddell has one of the longest standing programs, but also not unique to HIV.
Okay.
I think what could be good for those groups that might have mixed sero status is if some kind of card or flyer or whatever was actually just given to whoever is facilitating or just brought there so people can pick up on their own, since obviously you couldn't use the mixed sero status group as an actual group, but folks could then, you know, if they like, connect directly with us.
Okay, that's a good idea. Thanks, Mark.
And perhaps even like flyering up at Polk Street at the Community Health Center. They do have that. I don't know if they still have that kind of reception drop-in area during COVID times, but people are definitely still using the health center. And even flyering at Project Open Hand as well. I mean, places just where there are hubs.
Possibly Community Forward SF, formerly known as CAPS as well.
Health SF. okay, so I have...
Ella, you're going to need to make sure that the Spanish-speaking ability, St. James, you mentioned, I was actually thinking of I can't remember her name. She's presented to the council for upstairs with regards to the teach data. I want to say Emily, but I'm wrong. Oh, damn, it's going to bug me. Okay, it'll come to me in a second. And then Jenna requests at gender health, I think, within the city. Son of a beeswax.
Barry Zevin with Whole Person Integrated Care, or you may know him under different names like street medicine.
Aaron.
Antoinette from Link?
No.
The two folks who presented last year, right?
Yes.
Melina, if you remind me, I can just find an old email that I chained that I had with them and introduce.
Okay. That sounds great.
Jenna requests I have. I can't remember the other person that appeared with her.
Aaron Wilson is one of them. Right. DPH, and you know, did the trans data, the teach studies.
This is really great so far. I think probably what I'll do is start off directly with council members who have these connections. So Billy Cooper, Juba at St. James, and Mark, I'll also ask you to introduce me to the gender health folks. I have a lot of other places here, like San Francisco Community Health Center, the Women's Center of Excellence, Lyric. I think this other one is CHSF. I think that was from Beth. I'm wondering, do you all have direct connections at these places that you could introduce me, or do you have someone I could directly reach out
to? The last one. The first three, yes. San Francisco Community Forward, somebody else from HHS will have to. I mean, maybe I do, but would they remember me? Hard to say.
SFCHC, that one, Beth?
SFCHC, we know people. SFCHC, Women's COE, and I'm escaping the second to last one. One of the others, we know. The Community Forward SF. I have a contact, but we'll have you somebody more recognizable connect you. Because I've only spoken with them over email a couple times.
Okay, that sounds great. So I will follow up with you separately over email and try to get some of these connections going. But I think first I'll start with Billy and Juba and the gender health. And then I'm just thinking out loud of like my plan for reaching out to all these people. But anyone else before?
Janetta Johnson, is she in your circles at all?
Janetta Johnson, I'm not sure.
Okay, she's a previous council member, so at least prevention that far back, and has small nonprofit in the TL, but if you don't have connection with them, we'll do second rounds, kind of.
Okay. Janetta Johnson, I wrote them down. I also want to make sure, I think, Thomas, you brought up language capacity. I'm wondering, apologies if I missed this, but were any of these groups specifically targeting people who speak Spanish or
Ella primarily works with trans Latina.
Ella?
Yeah.
Okay.
Monolingual trans Latina women.
So, is that Ella, like ELLA?
E/LA.
Okay. Okay. And Thomas, did you say you have a connection there?
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely help with that one.
Okay.
Funny thing too is once you, Nikki comma at SFCHC, once you kind of reach out to Nikki, she's got connections to all these people. So.
Okay. That's great. And then I'm wondering, are there any other, language groups that we're missing here, just like within the community, or any other demographic groups? Like, I want to make sure we're covering Black trans women and Latina trans women and Filipino trans women and white trans women. But does that seem like we're going to be able to find all those folks within the places that we've mentioned, or does anyone have any other specific ideas?
SFCHC does provide medical services or DPH providers in other languages, so it's possible some of the focus group participants might represent other languages, but I don't know the proportions. I don't know if that's who would volunteer to be in the focus group.
Okay. Well, it sounds like that's a really great resource, so I will definitely reach out to them. Okay, great. I have a big list here, so I'll be following up with the people we talked about, as well as Beth and Thomas, and maybe Stephen. I think Stephen put Lyric in the chat.
I can introduce you to, her name is Wendy, although I don't know that she's the appropriate party at the organization. I haven't done an outreach there in a while, so I'm not familiar with their org chart, but I can certainly introduce you to somebody. We might take a moment to figure out exactly who the person to help you connect would be.
I can. They've actually had a lot of leadership and mid-level turnover recently, so they've got a new ED and a lot of new people in different roles. So let me know if you need help figuring out which person to talk with.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Beth. Okay. So I also would like to briefly talk about methodology. usually how we do this is we do, we put together a survey that has, it's pretty long. It's like 50 questions, a paper survey, and we bring that to folks. They fill it out before the interview, and then we talk to them one-on-one to try to get some more qualitative data. A similar thing with the focus groups. That's how we've been doing it for a while, and it's and we've gotten really good information that way. But just with the past couple of years, difficulty during COVID, I know some folks suggested looking at methodology and seeing if we have any other ideas to bring to the table. So I just wanted to ask if folks had any thoughts on that.
Sorry, Melina, what would be helpful there? I feel like the question is a little too broad for me to contribute.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it is a pretty broad question because we're basically looking for like any new ideas people have for getting information. I am cautiously optimistic that this year doing the surveys and interviews and focus groups like we've always done will yield better results because the pandemic is just a lot better right now than it has been, but hopefully that will stay. But I mean, you never know. Mark mentioned flyering, which I think it wouldn't hurt to try. I know that we did that for Ecola a few years ago, but it was flyering mostly at the Shanti Polk Street office. And I know that's one challenge with flyering is that it can be hard to filter who is like calling the number and like, are they living with HIV or they're gonna be trying to call multiple times, but I think it could be a worthwhile thing to try. But I think if folks don't have any other ideas, we can just stick with what we've been doing and keep it open if folks have more advice or feedback as we're rolling this out.
Okay, that's helpful. I feel like the I don't want to say social marketing, it's social, basically kind of interviewing somebody and then giving them a couple coupons to give to a friend. We used to call it snowballing in the research days, but there's a whole study around it. I can't remember what it is, but it's got terminology, but just that ability to kind of have people who are being interviewed be recruiters at the same time. It might get a little bit tricky with HIV status, but it's also people are kind of opting into that if they want to give this. Yeah.
And I kind of love the idea, Thomas, but unfortunately, actually, HHS restrictions would not allow us to do that. We use Ryan White dollars for our incentives, and so we need to have proof, like a name, even though we're not going to share the name necessarily. Our incentives have to be tracked back to specific folks, so we can't give them to other folks to disperse.
Could you? And this is logistically, I'm totally fine, and we can drop this in a sec. Could you basically say, hey, if this person comes in, gosh, I really wish I could remember what the study is called or the process. If you give this coupon to a friend, they bring it in, we'll send you a text and give you $20, basically. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but we don't give cash incentives. It's always,
or,
yeah, it's always.
Okay, no worries. I'll let it go.
I mean, I like the idea. Snowballing effect is a pretty cool one, right? It'll get people interested, but yeah, because of tracking, that's just a difficult.
It's a very challenging tracking.
Actually, it's not even just HHS. It's our own internal finance department as well for our annual audits. So in both directions, we need to be able to portray that we have, that we can connect each use of an incentive with an individual.
Sounds good, okay.
Sorry. I see also that Derek has a question in the chat.
Oh. I think my impression from when this topic was decided is that it was going to be broad. I think like anyone trans identifying, but I think it's really up to the group.
What was the vote on? Because that's pretty much what the full council determined. I wish I could remember offhand.
I think it was broad.
I think it was trans communities, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah, okay. Then that's as broad as it gets.
I can't say that the number of trans men living with HIV is small enough that we suppress the data, which means it's usually under either 5 or sometimes 10. So it's that doesn't mean it will stay that way, but you don't have to not outreach, but it will be a little hard to reach people, I would think. But there may be one group where a lot of people do attend, so I could be mistaken about the hard to find the people.
Yeah, I wonder if because the population is so small, if people would feel uncomfortable, like with confidentiality, or maybe they wouldn't. I'm not sure, but I think if anyone has any leads on that, it could be worth exploring.
That could, for example, be something that would come up at Lyric or one of the other places that isn't as HIV focused. So maybe just naturally it will come about.
Okay. Thanks for your question, Derek. Okay, well, my next step will be to start reaching out to folks and making some connections. We also will be working on putting the survey together, which we'll bring to the committee for everyone to approve it. The survey usually looks pretty similar every year, but we do try to tailor it as much as possible to the populations we're focusing on while still keeping it pretty broad. So we'll be working on that as well. The main things I wanted to talk about today, and I think we've pretty much covered it, but I don't know if anyone else has any other thoughts, or I don't know if Mark, if you have anything to add.
No, I was just actually looking through a list of providers and see if we left anyone out. I don't know if they're still doing groups, but the Trans Center of Excellence used to do groups. Anyway, you and I can talk about that offline.
Okay.
So no, I don't have anything to add. This was a great conversation, lots of suggestions.
Okay, cool. I guess then I'll turn it back to Richard.
All right, thank you, Melita. Thanks everyone. Wow, there's a lot of good work was done today. That looks like that's it now. Next meeting is May 4th and that will be online as we've talked about earlier. That will be a Zoom meeting, virtual. So that looks like it, folks. Next meeting is May 4th. And please remember that the full council meeting is in person this month on the 25th.
Yes. Derek and Melina, can you both stay after class?
Cool. Good seeing folks. Take care.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.